The ball has dropped in New York City, and as we welcome you to the first Musings on Golf of the new year, here's hoping you have many golf balls dropping into the cup in 2026. So happy to be with you once again. I am your host, Kelly Elbin, along with my dear friend and our executive producer, Jenna Self, and we are set to kick off 2026 with Brian Mitchell, one of the great return specialists in the history of the National Football League. Brian is a very avid golfer. Brian is also someone who I listen to with great regularity through Odyssey, listening to 106.7 The Fan, one of the two sports stations in the nation's capital where I'm from. He and a guy named J.P. Finley really form a dynamic midday team on 106.7 The Fan. Have a lot of fun listening to those guys, and they have a lot of fun working with one another. Brian's great. Played 103 rounds of golf last year. You'll learn that that's not even close to the record number that he played one year. He got into the 200s. But one of the reasons that I've done this, it kind of started with Tommy Hutton last year. Tommy Hutton, former major leaguer, had Tommy, the buddy of mine who I play golf with down here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Tommy leading into the Major League Baseball playoffs last year, trying to combine, you know, certain times of year with golf and whatever that particular sport may be. And Tommy was, I think, a really fun guest to listen to, a lot of stories. And the same here with Brian Mitchell. Brian Mitchell is a guy who, in my opinion, should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Brian Mitchell is second to, in a lot of categories, to a great, the greatest return specialist in the history of the National Football League, Devin Hester, who is the only strictly return specialist to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. However, Brian Mitchell, you look at just his records. He owns the records. He owns the three biggest return records as far as yardage, most career kickoff return yards, most career punt return yards, and therefore most career total return yards. Brian Mitchell, in his, 13-year career, had 19,000 total return yards between kickoffs and punts. He was a two-time second-team All-Pro, first-team All-Pro in 95. One of the really interesting things about Brian Mitchell is that he played quarterback, really a running quarterback, at the University of Southwestern Louisiana, which is now Louisiana Lafayette. Brian Mitchell became the first player in NCAA history to pass for more than 5,000 yards and rush for more than 3,000 yards. The one thing he didn't do in college, though, was he never returned a punt and he never returned a kickoff. And when the Washington Redskins drafted him in the fifth round in 1990, they told him, hey, the best way for you to make this team as a fifth round pick is through special teams. And Brian, being a guy who, you know, glom onto it, let's go, let's dive into it, was ready for the task. And you'll hear about the success he had from the very first kickoff return. You'll hear about what it's like to try to catch a punt with guys barreling down on you. But Brian was just a fierce competitor. And along with a guy named Joe Jacoby, who all he did as the left tackle of the Washington Redskins was lead them to three Super Bowl titles, those two guys should be wearing the gold jackets as part of the members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But you really enjoy the interview with Brian. He, as I said, he's one of those guys, didn't play when he was a kid, took advantage of some opportunities playing in pro-ams and different things when he was a player. Then he also got involved in the media side. And as he notes, his media career has been really much longer than his professional football career. And he's really, really good. So you'll enjoy this interview with Brian Mitchell as we preview the NFL playoffs. He'll give you his thoughts on who's going to be the AFC representative, the NFC representative, and who he thinks will win Super Bowl 60 out in Northern California in February. And you'll hear a whole lot of fun golf talk. Brian's also, as I say, he's kind of a renaissance man. Brian's a big-time biker. He's raised a lot of money through biking. And he's a foodie. We didn't even really get into the foodie aspect of who Brian is, being a Cajun guy and a lot of foods that he enjoys, particularly around Thanksgiving and the holidays. And Brian also being the son of a military man, as you could just go onto YouTube and type in Brian Mitchell military workouts, see all that he does to keep his body in shape and try to pass that along to people who want to keep their bodies in tune as well. And just before we get to our terrific corporate partners in Titleist, William & Harry, and the Friars Golf Club, stay tuned after the interview with Brian Mitchell. I want to talk about some of the great guests we have coming up, and I think you're going to be very pleased, particularly with two Hall of Famers who we're scheduled to talk with later this month. But now, our friends at Titleist, William & Harry, and the Friars Golf Club, and then Brian Mitchell. America, this is your moment. William & Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here so every fan can feel like part Team USA from the first tee to the final putt. Two head-turning designs, premium deerskin, 100% waterproof with spikeless grip and all-day comfort. Limited run, don't sit this one out. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee. More control with your irons. More spin with your wedges. And more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
Golf is more than your scorecard, the brand of clubs you play, or the clothes you wear. Golf is a journey where every round is a memory, filled with friends old and new. The Friars Golf Club is where those lifelong friendships are made, on the first tee, in the 19th hole, and far beyond. Exclusive trips, unforgettable rounds, and the very best people. Indeed, great courses are simply better with great company. So join the Friars today. To learn more, email us at info@thefriars.com and put the word musings in the subject line to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. So we invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience at the Friars Golf Club. Well, it wasn't until the final play of the final game of the regular season on Sunday night that the final team was determined for the 2025-26 NFL playoffs. And I got to tell you, our special guest today knows all about reaching those playoffs and about earning the ultimate prize, the Lombardi Trophy, as Super Bowl champion. He holds all three major NFL return records, and today, when he's not playing more than 100 rounds of golf a year, 103 to be exact from what he told me, you can find him along with J.P. Finley on the B. Mitch and Finley Show on 106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C. What a pleasure, from a personal standpoint, a professional standpoint, to welcome Brian Mitchell to Musings on Golf. B. Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you, Kelly?
I'm doing great, Brian. We go back a long way only because as a great fan of the Redskins and having sat many games with my dad in RFK and watched you play, the thrills that you provided from, you know, Brian, on here, it seems like just far too long. It's great to see that complex there at RFK. They're finally going to demolish the stadium and build over it. But, Brian, the memories of playing in that place, pretty hard.
Outstanding memories. I can remember coming there as a young man, 21 years old, and having a chance to play in that place with Darryl Green and Monte Coben, and just hearing about all the things that had transpired before us. But there were times where you playing in games and it felt like the past, the people from the past were there helping us along the way. You know, like your people will tell you, like when you have some of these buildings, you know, you have the old ghosts in there that seem to help you out every once in a while.
Wet and the part of the stadium shaking, the bleachers literally shaking the way RFK was constructed. It was just a special thing. You mentioned it. We're going to talk a lot about a lot of different things. I want to get into the golf in a second, but you mentioned that 21-year-old kid and you know, sort of being mentored by some great players. Brian, as we record this, it's at 4:00 Eastern time on Monday, and it's not even heck, man, it's not even 18 hours since Tyler Loop missed the 44-yard kick that would have sent the Ravens to the playoffs. Instead, the rookie for Baltimore missed it badly. Brian, in looking back at that, and you're a special teams extraordinaire guy, man, Brian Mitchell, the pressure that had to have been on that kid.
Hey, listen, it was probably astronomical. You know, I know people sit at home and they look at football and they can say, well, he just has one job to do. Have you ever had any situation like that where everybody's thoughts and feelings are resting on what you do? And I think as a young man right there, he's a very good kicker. He's a rookie. This is his first time doing it. I preach all the time on the radio about how it takes time to learn how to play at this level. But I would say this, he has one of the greatest coaches in the world to be on his side, John Harbaugh. I remember when we were here, I was in Washington and David Akers missed a field goal in preseason and they cut him. And John Harbaugh picked him up there in Philadelphia. And David went on to have 11, 12, 13-year Pro Bowl-driven career because John gave him a chance. And that, you know, we make mistakes. I remember fumbling the ball and Darryl Green was walking off the field with his arm around me saying, don't worry about that. Put it behind you. Make the next one happen. And I was able to come back because of having people like that. When you have those guys that you look up to that seem to be there for you in those situations, you can get past it. I know a lot of fans don't understand it, and it's not for them to understand. But when the people that you truly believe in, the person that can make a difference in your life can decide if you're going to be here or not, is still pulling for you, it makes it a little easier to get over the hump and you try to make sure you never go back to that position again.
Yeah, and I was going to say, it's one thing to have, you know, certainly Coach Harbaugh with his background as a special teams coach, that's one thing. But to have your peers, right, Brian, to know that they have your back,
yes.
That's such a psychological, you know, advancement for you, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like you go to work with these guys every day. They understand, they know how hard you work. You know, because like I hear, see a guy miss a field goal, and I'll hear media people saying, and fans alike saying, well, you know, out there, they're wasting time not doing this job. But the guys on that team understand how much you put into us. And when you watch that game last night after he missed it, and he put his hands in over his eyes, and he was crying. And his holder, which is normally your captain, probably a veteran guy, tapped him on the helmet and was like, it's time to get off this field. Because, you know, it's like, yes, you can live in it, but you got to get to the point where you can start getting over it. And I think having guys in his corner like that is going to help him out. And listen, he'll remember this moment, you know, and he has to decide whether there's going to be something that's going to be detrimental or something that influential in his career.
Good stuff. Joined by Brian Mitchell here, Super Bowl champion, Pro Bowler, one of the great, if not the greatest, return man in the history of the National Football League here on Musings on Golf. And Brian, we're going to continue with a lot of your thoughts on football. Let's dive into golf, because when I reach out to some of my guests in advance who are not, say, a tour player, and I want to know, you know, how much do you play? And so some guys or ladies will say, I play 50 rounds of golf. Brian Mitchell, no, 103 rounds. What's your index? 6.2.
Yeah.
What's the lowest round you ever shot? 69 at Chantilly Golf and Country Club in the, you know, 2004, 2005. Let's just kind of start from the beginning. How did you get started? You're a Louisiana guy. You're the son of a military guy. Did you play when you were a kid? How did you get started in golf? And Brian, did golf and you kind of click right away?
Well, I never played golf when I was young. And then I got here in Washington, and I would notice that guys would always say they were going to play in these charity golf tournaments. And, you know, after a while, you know, you have nothing going on. And Ernest Biner was my mentor. And Ernest said, hey, man, come out here on this golf tournament with me. And you go out. I have no clubs. And I hit his clubs. And I hit one good drive out of the 100 I might have tried to hit. And that's all you remember. You remember the good stuff. And then you hit a long putt, then you want to start going again. And I think right around 1996 is when I kind of really got into it a little bit more. My wife purchased me some golf clubs, and I asked her, I said, are you sure about this? And she said, what do you mean? I said, because you have to invest a lot of time in this thing, and you know how I am. Like, my friends are telling you, once I'm in, I'm in. And because I don't want to be bad at something. And I dove into it, but I still just played charity golf tournaments for the most part until I went to Philadelphia. And Ron Jaworski, owned a lot of golf courses and enabled us, the guys on the team, to go play his courses on Tuesdays, sometimes on Saturdays and things like that when we had time. And I would go out and play, and I took full advantage of it. And once I retired, I was on the golf course like every day. And like that 103 that I played last year,
yeah,
that's full.
I was going to say, I bet it is, right? That's a low number.
Low.
Yeah, the bar, do you know the most you've played in a given year?
256 rounds.
Oh, wait a minute. Really?
Yes.
Why?
Donnie Simpson, the guy from the local area, from the area, absolutely, radio personality, was my friend. And Donnie and I, we played, there were days we played 54.
Yeah.
There were days we played from sun up to sundown. So we don't know if we got to the complete 72 in one day, but we got as many as we can get until the lights were going. I mean, until all of the sunlight was out and we couldn't see the ball anymore. So I played some rounds, man, and I love it. Look, it's just one thing that, you know, I was a guy, if I had time, I played golf. And then when COVID started, I picked up bike riding. You know, I lost a lot of weight. I mean, I gained a lot of weight and I started riding bikes. And then I found out I could raise money for charity on a bicycle. And I think that takes me, that's the only thing that could take me away from the golf course, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit later as far as Brian Mitchell is kind of a renaissance man with what you do online, with the military workouts, with the biking, and with the golf. Did you get a lot of instruction? Did you go to a PGA professional? How did you become a better player?
I played golf for about 7-8 years before I took my first lesson.
Oh.
And because, like, I think for most amateur golfers, you go on a golf course, you hit it left, you start aiming right. You start hitting it right, you start aiming left. But you never correct what the problem is.
Yeah.
And I went to, I forgot the guy that, because he and his wife both were top 100 golf instructors in the country. They live right here in Aldi, Virginia. And I started taking lessons from them. And also Chris Cheddar. I took some lessons from her husband.
She's good. Yeah.
I took lessons from her husband. But after I took lessons for so many times, and you understand, how the golf lesson and teachers are, they strip you down to the beginning and they build you back up. But I didn't feel like I had to go all the way back to the beginnings. So now I'm one that can remember stuff. So whatever they taught me, I would go and practice all that stuff on my own. And then when I got to a point where I had enough information, I don't need to go back to the golf instructor now. I just utilize it myself, and I work.
So you, a little bit of a sponge in your brain. You soaked a lot of that in?
Yes, I do. And I basically do it. And when I ask questions, because I get invited to play a lot of all the pro-ams and things like that. And when I play with guys and they say, hey, don't mind asking me a question. I don't mind if you ask me a question. Okay, well, I'm going to ask questions. And Brendan Steele,
Canadian
golfer, he's the guy that finally started me to getting the ball out the sand, because, you know, I would do a regular grip and do my regular swing, and every once in a while I'll get it out, but most times I'll stay in it for 3 or 4 times. But what Brendan Steele taught me how to just put my grip and swing the same way, I get out the sand all the time now, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of time I hold out some, and I've left some where I just have to tap in. So it's about trying to, when you're young, you hear about, you know, you're trying to drive the ball, you want to bomb it. But as you get older, you realize that short game will make your score and your handicap a lot better.
Yeah, no question about it. And so you really kind of pieced together a lot of different things, like the Brendan Steele anecdote. Mm-hmm. You've a lot of different input that you've received that's really kind of helped shape you into that index of 6 or so, right?
Yeah, and I've been lower, but I have a friend of mine named Donnie Wallace, who's he's a vice president of VIP services and ShotLink, I think it is, on the PGA Tour. And Donnie and I was playing when I was in college. Donnie used to always try to get me to play golf. I'm like, no, I'm not playing no golf. And then when I pick it up, I started telling him I'm playing golf. He's like, hold on now. You playing golf? I'm like, yep. He's like, I'm not messing with you. Because he said, if you're playing golf, you must be good at it. And Bob used to get me clothes and stuff. And I had a chance to meet Tiger Woods a few times through Don. So I started to beat up on him a little bit, so he doesn't play me anymore in golf.
Well, I was going to say, I bet he said that because you are a hyper-competitive guy. That's just your very much your DNA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, like, that 69 that you shot, down the stretch of that round, I'm sure you remember it. What was going through your head at the end of a round knowing, man, I've got the chance to shoot the best round of my life? What were you thinking?
You know what? I think in that round, that's probably the first time I played golf and the only time I played golf without actually knowing where I was. Okay.
And what do you mean by that?
Because like normally when you're playing golf and you look after the first round and you're even par or something like that, you go, wow, man, I'm playing a good round. And then you start thinking about what you could shoot.
Yes.
And you go the other way. Well, this time I knew I was playing well, but I didn't look at it. I didn't think about it. I know, like, the thing about the par fives, back then I was a much longer, I could hit the ball much longer. So I was on par five normally in two or chipping up. And I think I got, I birdied two of them, and I might have eagled one of the par fives, and I parred the other. And so now I get to hole number 17, which is a par five, and that's when I realized, man, I am shooting the best round. The thing people don't get, I had a bogey on number 18.
And still shot 69.
And then, so that to me, and then I had another round I played out in Greyhawk in Arizona where I shot 71 that day.
Nice.
That is probably, I would say that as a better round because I was in a golf tournament with all my buddies. And we play this yearly thing where, you know, we play 12, 13 tournaments. We keep scores like the Ryder Cup. I mean, like the FedEx Cup. And when we get to the end, it's all for the marbles at that point. And that first day I came out, I told her, I said, I feel good. And I ended up shooting 71 at Greyhawk. So with competition big time for me.
Of course, absolutely. And as you said, you didn't get ahead of yourself. You didn't think about what was right. You stay. It's a lot to be said for that, Brian, of staying in the moment, right?
In golf, it definitely is. And I think the one thing I love so much about golf, other sports, you can blame somebody. Football, he didn't block for me. Baseball, hey, I threw a perfect game, but hell, you know, we had no defense and stuff like that. Or you know, somebody made an error. In golf, I don't care what the caddy says. I don't care what you think or what somebody else said. You have to swing that club. So it's all on you. And in golf, when you start thinking, like one thing I know, you got to stay in the moment and you got to think about what you're doing. You know, I can be playing a football game and look in the stands a little bit. Then I can come back to football and play it. But if I'm thinking about what's in the stands or somewhere else when I'm swinging a golf shot, I'm not going to do what I want to do. I can't execute that shot. So I have to be focused on it. And that's kind of a reason why I love the game, because, you know, it's one of those games where it's all on you. And you're going to find out how much you're getting better and how much you can focus and concentrate as you play this game, because you can play the same course every day. And they can put that pin in the same spot every day. And I guarantee you, if you come to that course with a different mindset, you could probably shoot a 77 one day, and the next day you might shoot 90, no matter what, because you're not focused on the moment. The shot at hand is going to be a problem.
Tell you what, just a great thrill to be joined by Brian Mitchell, the greatest all-around punt and kickoff returner in NFL history here on Musings on Golf. You can hear Brian and J.P. Finley afternoons on B. Mitch and Finley on 106.7 The Fan in the nation's capital of Washington, D.C. Brian, one more football question before we get into the current. Fifth round pick, 1990. You had, in your collegiate career, you had never returned punts. You were a quarterback. You had never returned punts. You had never returned kicks. I'm wondering, did Coach Gibbs, did Bobby Beathard, how did that process work? Did they say to you, Brian, you've got a shot to play in this league, but you're going to need to do this instead of what you've been doing? What's up?
Wayne Sevier. He said,
Hey, that's coach.
One of those guys, your quarterback, pampered. The only way you're going to make this team is returning punts and kicks. I'm like, okay. You know, the thing for me is I love football and I love competition. And I remember coming out of college and they were like, you know, if we try at a different position, what position would you want to play? And I said, listen, I don't care where you try me. Because my dream has always been to play in the NFL. If you want to try me a defensive back, I'll try that. But I'd much rather have the ball in my hands. And they said I would have to try that kick return. And my first kick return, I returned for a touchdown. And then later on that year, the body bag game where we had
Philly. Walt
Stanley and Joe Howard Johnson, two punt returners who got hurt. So now I didn't end up returning a punt in that game. But the next week against the Saints, I had to return punts because both of those guys got hurt and I was backing them up. And I had to learn on the job, you know. And for me, it just – the thing that was so frustrating was I probably could have been catching punts in high school and college, but I was the quarterback and my coaches would never let me do it. And I always wanted to try it because I always wanted to try something else in the sport. And when I got – that was my first year and I had to catch these punts. And we had a guy, Kelly Goodburn – Ralph Mojinko at the time. Ralph was a left-footed punter, and I had to catch the punts in the wind. And I think I got 20 punts. I'm going to catch one of them. But the thing of it, I always knew once the ball's in my hand, I know what to do. And I was able to read the spin to where I could let it bounce, and I'll catch it on a run until I learned how to really read the spin, catch the ball, and just – I was never concerned about getting hit. So the not being fearful mindset, that worked out very good in our punt return and kick return.
I was going to say, right, and not afraid to be hit. Because, Brian, for us, those 99% of us who've never stood there waiting to catch an NFL punt with guys barreling down, what is that like? What was that like the first time in an NFL game that mattered? You've got guys ready to just clobber you.
I would say the first kickoff return, I was so excited that I don't think I even saw anybody.
Yeah.
I can remember was Wayne Sevier, my coach, saying the hole opens and closes quickly. So all I would tell you, son, catch the ball and get through the hole. And I caught the ball. We were in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, playing against the Falcons. And I caught it. And when I realized what was going on, I was through the hole in the end zone.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
That kickoff, it was so much fun for me. And I remember Charles Mann saying I made the team. And Wayne Sevier said, you haven't done bleep yet. Get on the field, your own kickoff coverage, and you better be on the tackle, which I was. And then my first punt, though, we were playing against the Saints, and I catch the ball, and then it just went black. Vaughn Johnson from the Saints, he hit me, the back of my head hit the ground, and he said, welcome to the NFL. And me being a trash talker, like, that's all you got, man. My grandmama hit like that. No, she doesn't, but I told him that.
That's great stuff. All right, let's talk some 2025-26 NFL playoffs. I mentioned the Tyler Luke kick. You've got 14 teams in. You've got the number one seed Denver in the AFC, the number one seed Seattle in the NFC. Things get started Saturday afternoon. We've got the Rams visiting the very surprising Carolina Panthers in Carolina. Brian, it's been an interesting year, a very unusual year, I think, in the NFL in a lot of ways, that you don't necessarily have a standout team. For you, as the playoffs start, is there one team in either conference that, for you, really stand out? You say, that's the team to beat.
Well, I look at I know the Eagles won the Super Bowl last year, but they haven't played the best football thus far. Their defense is scary, and I know you had mentioned the thing when we talked earlier about the defenses now on these different teams.
Yeah.
When you look at offense and defense, and I think when you look at offense and defense, you're talking about a Rams team with a veteran-led quarterback who's been to the Super Bowl. Mm. And their defense has played outstanding. Two great receivers. You go with the Seattle Seahawks, a team where that defense is very, very good also, where McDonald comes from Baltimore, goes there, and that team is playing. But you have Sam Darnold, which many people don't give him a lot of credit. He had played well so great he did in Minnesota. But down the stretch in the playoffs, he started to see those ghosts that he saw in New York. This year, he's played a lot better. But when he gets pressure, sometimes he starts to crack a little bit for me. So when I look at it, I believe Seattle is a better team. But I think the Rams scared me more than any team in the NFC. But the Eagles, if they can get something working with their offense, because their offense has been so inconsistent this year, that defense is super scary. They have talent galore, and they can get to the quarterback. They can disrupt the running game. So in the NFC, I would say it's the Rams or the Seahawks that probably I'm leaning towards that those two teams possibly can end up. One of those two teams can end up in the Super Bowl.
You mentioned the Eagles. Coach Fangio has done a really good job with that defense. Head coach Nick Sirianni, though, made the decision, Brian, to withhold a lot of the players. And in hindsight, it cost him a spot, a 3 seed as opposed to 2. What do you think about that?
Well, I think part of that decision came from another decision that he made when he went for 2 points against Washington a few weeks before. He saw the fight break out. And I think part of that was, look, I'm not playing my starters against that team because Washington basically was like, we'll see you again. Yes. And I'm not letting one of my – if I was him, I probably would have done the same thing in this situation. I'm not putting my guys out there and then somebody, you know, go out there and hurt one of them. But I played in Philadelphia for 3 years.
Nick Sirianni.
Yeah, I don't know, but I was coming down the elevator and a lot of fans were highly upset. And I truly believe that if he doesn't win this game or they better not, that they don't play well, he's going to have a problem. You know, it's like other people like, well, he didn't want to play a certain team. I don't know if that's the case or not, but sometimes when you're not playing well, you keep playing so you can find a rhythm. And if they don't find that rhythm, it could be a problem with him up there because Philadelphia fans will let you know how they feel.
Well, they will. And Brian, you played there, as you said. You played against them. I worked games at the Vet when I was the statistician for the Redskins Radio Network, went to a lot of games as a fan. It's a different mentality up there, Brian. It's a different set of people altogether.
Oh, yeah. Like, they don't insinuate. They tell you exactly what they feel.
Yeah, and that's true. You know where you stand, do you not?
Exactly. They go right to your face. And you look at last year, hell, at the beginning of the season, they were talking about wanting to run him out of town, and then they end up winning the Super Bowl. So he gets the pass. But I would say this, he better keep it going because Andy Reid was a great coach up there doing a lot of great things. And they grew tired of him. They'll grow tired of Nick Sirianni as well.
Coming to the end of our great talk with Brian Mitchell here on Musings on Golf. We've got a few other topics to discover. I want to ask you the segue, Brian, going from having played more than 10 years in the league, from being a player to a media member, of which you've been now a long, long time. But you mentioned that you, even during your playing days, you kind of dipped your foot in the end of the pool there, got started a little bit on the media side, right?
Yeah, I started doing it, I think, exactly it was 91. And I've been doing it as a profession since I left the game in 2003, 2004. So I've been doing this long and I played football. But it's fun, you know, and I think the thing for me, I approached media just like I approached football. You know, you have to improve on little things yearly, daily, whatever. And you gotta put the work in. I talk to a lot of young guys who are coming to try to get into this area. You're like, well, man, this guy is doing this. I say, hold on, bro. This guy has been doing it for 25 years. You just got out of college. What makes you think you're going to just walk in? And that's kids today. Kids today believe they are supposed to be where you are. No, you got to go through that path to go through that journey to get where I'm at. Like I told guys, look, man, I've been doing media longer than you've been living. You know, they're like, well, you played football. Yes, I did play football. I said, I majored in chemical engineering. I promise you, you couldn't go do that. But the whole thing of it, I understand hard work. Growing up in a military household, my dad taught me everything I wanted to know, you know, and from the he gave me a statement that I take with everything that I do, whether it's media, getting on a bike, playing golf, you know, playing sports. He said, you're a Mitchell, you can do anything. And I took pride in that. And every time I'm going, that's why people know, if I decide to do it, I'm going to be good at it because I'm going to put the work in. You know, I might not be the best, but you're going to have to worry about me a little bit because I'm going to do everything I can to try to be the best out there.
So let's go there for a second. Son of a career U.S. Army soldier, your dad. I've watched a lot of your YouTube videos. The military workouts that you're doing. This is, again, another kind of part of this. I mentioned this Renaissance man, Brian Mitchell, but it's kind of true. And you do, once you sink your whatever into it, you go deep, right? I mean, this has become a viral passion. And my guess is also, Brian, that if you can help lives, if you can help people through what you're doing, it means a lot to you.
It does. And that's why I do it, you know, because I've always, when people talk about working out, you hear a trainer or a coach say, get you a partner so you can hold each other accountable. When I hear military people talk, like they had some Green Berets and all come in and talk to the commanders last year, and they had to carry these like telephone pole things. And it talked about how you have to work in unison as a team. And you got to be carrying it properly to be able to make sure you move it. And my dad basically raised us like that, where he talked to me about depending on somebody, leaning on this person, and make sure they could depend on you. So I try to get up in the mornings, and, you know, if I miss one, I'll go, because after I'm finished here, I drove back last night. So I'm going to get, after I finish here, I'm going to go work out. And I try to give a message to people where somebody might be sitting there just like I was this morning. I was tired this morning, and I had to get over to the radio show. So I went and did my radio show. Promise you I'll do this. I'm here. And then after this, I'm going to go into this room, my workout room right over here, and I'm going to get my workout in to make sure somebody understand that we might not always do it at the time we say it, but you still get it done. And I have people that always are pushing me on it, and I'm pushing them. And if we can get one person every other week to come in again, and we keep doing it every the whole year, do it the next year, we'll have a lot more healthier people around. And that's all I want to do, because I truly believe in it, you know. And my dad, I know how his military background, his teaching, his learning, and that he transferred to me has helped me be successful in this world. So I just try to follow that as much as I can, because you can't probably find a more disciplined person than a military person.
Yeah, no question about it. And you're the youngest of seven, and growing up in that environment. Yeah, the influence of your dad, just from as you said, day to day, Brian, had to be enormous.
It was, you know, because I would watch it, you know. And I remember when I was in elementary school, someone asked me, who's your hero? I was like in a 7th, 8th grade at the time. That's where middle school. And I'm like, Blanche Mitchell Sr. And they're like, who? I said, my dad. And they said, well, you got all these athletes. I said, they ain't teach me nothing. I said, everything I learned from football and all, and it's not from them. I learned from believing in me first. And my dad taught me that. I might have told you, he told me I was the Mitchell, I could do anything. I was 10 years old when he told me that. And I have never stopped believing that. I don't care what it is. If I decide I'm going to do it, I'm going to do what I need to do to become good at it. And I believe that because I constantly hear it. It's like he's sitting on my shoulder telling me, son, you can do this. You're a Mitchell. And I believe it every day.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, two golf-related questions and then a football question to wrap it up. We're going to look to you for your pick for the Super Bowl. Golf-related. So you mentioned you were in the 250 range for the most rounds of golf you've played. A minuscule 103 in 2025. What are the goals? You set goals. What do you set any goals for your rounds of golf, Brian Mitchell, for 2026?
Actually, I want to try to hit in the 60s again. That's my goal this year. But as far as the amount of rounds I play, I never set that about the amount I want to play, because I know I'm trying. I'm on a board now of the Face of America Bike Riding, and I'm going to be trying to raise as much money as I can for that. So I'm trying to ride over 7,000 miles on the bicycle this year, which is going to take me away from the golf course a little bit. But, you know, I could still probably get, I could probably still get 100 rounds in it and still with that.
7,000 miles. That's what will likely happen as far as bike riding for you this year?
That's my goal. So I've been over 7,000 a couple of times, but I think I could push that again, you know, because I just have to, I've gotten to a point now where when it's a bad weather day, I got a Peloton over here. I can still get 20 miles or so.
I guess that, right? No excuses, right?
Yep. Hey, no need to. No need to.
All right, two questions. One is something I really enjoy asking every one of our guests at the end of the show, Brian, and that is, if you could play a dream round of golf with three other people, and whether they're still with us or they're deceased, and where would you play that round? So who would those three be, and where would you go play? And before you answer it, by the way, I've had men and women who'd say, I'd love to play with Tiger or Jack, and we'd go play at Augusta National. But I've also had Scott Van Pelt from ESPN was on once and talked about that his father passed away when Scott was 21, and to have him be able to see his grandkids. So it could be personal, it can be Tiger Woods, whatever you want.
You know what? It's like, my dad wasn't the golf type. And, you know, he'll probably be sitting on the porch when I got home to find out. But I could see myself wanting to play golf with Muhammad Ali, who I've always seen him as a mentor and like a guy who has motivated me, because the man believes in himself, you know, no matter what. I would love to play with Tiger, because just watching him come up and watching how good, you look at Tiger's peak, and we see everybody comes along right now, and they're like, oh man, you should have seen so-and-so, oh, he's the next Tiger Woods. They ain't nowhere close to Tiger when Tiger was at his peak. Yeah. You know, would love to play with him. And then I'm a guy who absolutely loved comedy. So I would say Richard Pryor.
I was going to say.
So if I went Muhammad Ali, Richard Pryor, Tiger Woods, I got one of the greatest ever, who's a jokester as well. I got Richard Pryor and then Tiger. Yo, Tiger will be a little serious, but I'm sure those two guys can make him laugh. And I'll probably be the guy sitting there like a little kid in the candy store saying, man, can you believe I'm with these three dudes?
Exactly. Where would you play?
Oh, man. I'll be honest with you. I love this golf course down in, it's two courses. We probably play our morning round at Kenlock and finish up Robert Trent Jones over here in Gainesville.
Not a bad 1-2 combination.
Those courses, man, have been, I absolutely love those courses because they're pro ready and you have some of the best hospitality and service that you've ever seen in your life. So, and in both of those kitchens, they are as good as any restaurant you want to go to. So you both play great golf and you come off the golf course, you're going to be eating some spectacular food.
Speaking of Pryor, if you haven't seen the Netflix documentary already on Eddie Murphy, watch it. It is so good. And obviously, Eddie has a lot of reverence for Pryor, but it kind of gave me a different perspective on Eddie Murphy. But great choice there with Pryor. I mean, from a stand-up, there was no one else other than Richard Pryor was alone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Final question. We talked earlier about the playoffs this year. Give me an NFC champion, give me an AFC champion, and then give me a Super Bowl winner.
All right, I'm going to say NFC champion, you're going to probably, oh, man. I'm going to go with the Rams. I have this feel for, like, Matt Stafford is an older dude who's still getting it done at a high level, and I love Sean McVay. You know, you look at Sean, the guy who's as young as they come, but he knows, he has so much football knowledge, it's ridiculous. And then on the other side, Josh Allen just asked him, if he don't get it done this year, he probably won't get it done. But, I'm going to say it like that. I have to say, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Denver Broncos are going to make some noise. And I'll do a toss-up of those two, because I think Jacksonville is playing better than anybody out there right now on that side. Right? I understand everybody looking at New England, but they had an easier schedule. But Denver and Jacksonville, their defenses are special. But I just thought of the best defense I think out there is the Houston Texans.
Okay.
And I just think the offense is inconsistent. And I don't.
So who's your AFC pick?
I'm gonna go with a toss up between the Jaguars and the Denver Broncos.
And Broncos, and then give me your Super Bowl pick, please.
All right, six. Let's say if once you're in the Super Bowl, I go NFC East. I'm an NFC East guy. I don't care for the AFC.
Mm-hmm. So you go with the Rams.
The Rams.
Understood. A guy who played for the Redskins, who played for the Eagles, who played for the Giants. It's been such a treat to have Brian Mitchell with us today, Brian. One of these years, you and Joe Jacoby are going to put on those gold jackets and be in Canton, Ohio. I don't know when it's going to happen, but something tells me it's got to happen because your records are too good. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us here on Music Going Golf. It's a real treat.
No problem at all, man. Thank you very much for having me on.
Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes, that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
Is your golf life stuck in a bunker of country club hassles? Tired of the wait lists and the six-figure initiation fees? Well, at the Friars Golf Club, we take care of all of the hard work. Planning exclusive trips and unforgettable rounds on top-rated courses, so all you have to do is show up, have fun, and make lifelong friendships on the first tee, the 19th hole, and far beyond. Our terrific 2026 lineup includes international destinations like Dubai and Scandinavia, plus top domestic resorts such as Sand Valley and Black Desert, and access to some great private clubs. Join the Friars Golf Club today. Email us at info@thefriars.com, the word musings in the subject line, to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. We invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience with the Friars Golf Club. Brian Mitchell, can't thank you enough for being a part of Musings on Golf. A lot of fun to talk with you. His story is a very much a fascinating one, and his passion for the game of golf is off the charts. I love it. I'm just a big fan of guys who have, you know, had fantastic careers in one area, and then in Brian's case, dived into the media side and just does so much. And even he mentioning that even if his rounds of golf are down a little bit, because of what he's doing to raise funds through his biking, then that's okay. But expect to see Brian Mitchell on the golf course throughout 2026, plenty. All right, we've got some great guests coming up, folks. Annika Sorenstam, arguably the greatest women golfer in the history of the game, will be our guest next week. Annika, playing with her son in the PNC Championship last month, her son Will, I know, is a real thrill for her. Very excited to talk to Annika. Jan Stevenson, another member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, will be joining us later this month. So very excited to have the two of them along with us. And we'll keep you posted on other guests who are going to be along with us for Musings on Golf. One other thing, I thought it was interesting seeing the ratings for TGL, the simulated golf events that you see on ESPN. The ratings are good for year two so far. And Rory McIlroy, along with Tiger Woods, they're really the two who have spearheaded that whole effort to make that a part of what we enjoy now before the golf season gets going. And Rory kind of giving the green light to Brooks Koepka, who has quit the LIV Tour. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe you see Brooks Koepka as a spot player once or twice in this TGL sometime this year. And I anticipate you'll see Brooks Koepka back on the PGA Tour maybe by the end of this year. It's one of the interesting things. Brooks Koepka, to me, is one of the least likable guys I've seen and been around in golf. However, the thing about Koepka that the PGA Tour really misses is, and I believe this firmly in any sports environment, you got to have the good guys, you got to have the bad guys. And I think with Koepka missing, there's sort of that bad boy element to him that I think once he comes back on the PGA Tour, once you see him with more regularity, it'll be a great thing for the PGA Tour. It's a huge loss for LIV, and I expect more losses like that for LIV Golf, if not this year immediately, going into 2027. Thanks again to Brian Mitchell. A lot of fun being with him. For Jenna Self, Kelly Elbin signing off. Thanks for joining us as we kick off 2026 here on Musings on Golf.